at least in my judgment, Prabhupada's judgment too, actually, there was a kind of underlying weakness in our movement, which came directly following the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, as far as sadhana goes. So we discussed this, how if we're in the proper stage of practice of sadhana, we don't have to be perfect at all, but we have to be perfecting ourselves. We have to be practicing properly. That'll situate us correctly. It'll make our relationships with other devotees right, and it'll also help us in the development of our society, management, politics, and so on. The purpose of this course is also to enable anyone to become empowered to say this God. Now, the question is now, what is good sadhana? This is what we're going to focus on now. And I told you yesterday, sutra definition, chanting the holy name while trying to give up offenses. Somebody told me actually that definition somewhere in Rupa Goswami or somebody like that. I don't remember the exact reference. So it's other people that use this definition, chanting the holy name while trying to give up offenses. So there's a process for doing that. And we have to understand this process properly in order to be able to apply it. And I think a clear understanding, first of all, a philosophical understanding of what's going on and why we have to do it, and then a practical understanding will help everyone know what we're doing. Sometimes we just perform these activities because we're told to do so, but if we have proper understanding, it will help us and it will increase our faith. Understanding the process can answer a very important question or doubt or misgiving. Can I do it? Am I really capable of successfully performing bhakti yoga? One Western philosopher who did a study of Indian philosophies, the Sadarshan, says that in India, philosophy has a very practical aim in the various schools where people are trying for liberation, whether it's yoga or jnana yoga or bhakti yoga. And they all answer the doubt, will this actually work? Is liberation possible? He said that in India, the goal is transcendence of liberation. And the doubt is it actually possible? And the job of philosophy, he says, is to remove doubts. And I think that's certainly an important aspect. Some doubts are purely philosophical. Is God a person? Is Krishna really there? Are we really persons? So we kind of get a map of the universe when we get a philosophy, a little map of not just the universe, but of reality. And we understand ourselves. We are spirit souls. We're in material bodies. We understand how we become attached. We understand how we're supposed to become detached. And then we're given a roadmap out. This is the journey you have to take to get out of the material world and go to Krishna. But then we have to say, but is this journey, is it actually, can I undertake it? Can I do it successfully? Is it doable by me? Why have so many senior people failed? So many stalwarts, as Prabhupada called them, fallen down. How can I prevent my own falling down? This is the more practical, immediate one. What can I do to prevent myself from slipping and falling on the path of Krishna consciousness? If they, those big devotees, if they failed, how can I succeed? So I think we can go some way to talk about this. Now, Let's start try to understand the process by looking at a couple of verses which I think have been handed out to you from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which I have down here. Actually, these two verses in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu come right after one another, and also they're in Majjalila 17, 133 and 136. They basically come after one another because these are Sanskrit verses. Then in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a couple of Bengali verses which are basically translations of them. So this follows the sequence in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Because the second verse really kind of explains the first verse. So the first one tells us what the holy name is. Nama Chintamanihi Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinatva. Actually, there's an A there. Abhinatvan Nama Namanaha. Due to Sandhi, but the word is Abhinatva. Abhinatva. So the name, the holy name of Krishna, Nama, is Chintamani. That is to say, it's the transcendentally blissful bestower of all spiritual benedictions. Like a Chintamani stone gives everything. So the name is also like Chintamani. It gives all spiritual benedictions. You get a list of those benedictions in the first verse of the Shishastika. All the things, there's eight things that the holy name does. Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, Bhava Mahada Vagni Nirvapanam, Shreya Kairava, Chandrika Vitaranam, Vijubhadu Jivam. All of these are benedictions of the holy name. So it gives these benedictions. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It is the form of all spiritual rasa. This is the name. It is Purna. We know that from the invocation of Isha Upanishad. Perfect and complete. Just this name, Krishna, the sound. Two syllables, Krishna, we're talking about. It's Purna. Shuddha. Pure. No material contamination. Nitya Mukta. Eternally liberated or eternally transcendental. So why does this name have all these characteristics? Certainly, an extraordinary feature for some words that we can actually say with our own mouths. Abhinatva, that's the reason. On account of being non-different. Abhina means non-different. Tva means having the nature of non-difference. Nama, namanaha, between the name and that which is named. In other words, Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. Abhinatva, nama, namanaha. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. Therefore, it should be that when you say Krishna's name, you should experience Krishna directly. And all these direct experiences of Chintamani, the bestowal of all spiritual benedictions, this completeness of the name, Shuddho Nityamukto, all these things, you should experience all this. Actually, Krishna should appear before our eyes when we say the name Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's name are none different. But that doesn't seem to happen. Why? That's the next verse, Atta, which means therefore. Why this happens? Well, this is the reason. Atasi Krishna Namadi Nabaved Drayam Indriyai. Sevan Mukehi Jivadau Swayam Avas Parachataha. The reason is that Krishna's Sri Krishna Nam Adi, that means Krishna's name, etc. The Adi means etc. Etc. here has a very specific meaning. It denotes the sequence Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela. This is the sequence in which Krishna becomes revealed to the devotee. First, Krishna's name is revealed. Then his rupa, his form is revealed. Then his qualities become revealed. And then his leela, pastimes, relationships become revealed. So this is meant by Nam Adi. All these things. But it says, Atasi Krishna Nam, and the rest, Nabhavet Grayam Indriyai. They cannot be grasped, perceived. He says here, the word for Grayam, perceived, but really the meaning is to grab, apprehended by our senses, meaning our materially contaminated senses. This means that when we say the name Krishna with materially contaminated senses, we do not actually perceive what we are saying. If we see the holy name, if we perceive the holy name, Krishna, and everything in association with Krishna appears. That is the holy name. So what's the matter? Because our senses are materially contaminated, we cannot... let's say our senses are incapacitated. How did they come to this position? Well, we understand that the original use of the senses is to serve Krishna. The original use of the tongue and of speech is to glorify Krishna. The original use of the ears is to hear Krishna glorified, and so on. That's what our senses are actually there for. But now, we've taken those senses and employed them in the material world for another purpose. That is, our own enjoyment. Not the enjoyment of Krishna, but our own enjoyment separate from Him. This is known as sense gratification. Therefore, the senses become material. And they lose their ability to come into contact with Krishna. That's our state in the material world. So here we are, here's Krishna's name, full of all transcendental potencies and so on, and we cannot come into contact with it. What's to be done? Sevan mukhe hi jivado swayam eva sparatvana. However, the senses, and here the senses, jivha, adau is another way of saying it, sentra, beginning with the tongue, jivha here, with it has an H in it, jivha, not jiva, but jivha, beginning with the tongue, when the senses, beginning with the tongue, sevan mukhe, seva on mukhe, when they are directed toward Krishna with a idea of service, then swayam eva sparachadaha, then those names, form, and so on, they become revealed. They cannot grasp Krishna, yet if they are engaged in Krishna's service, the senses regain their capacity. They become, the fashionable word is empowered. They regain their potency. They become facilitated. So, we are here in this material world. We cannot come into contact with Krishna. Krishna, because of turning away from Krishna, Viparyaya Asmitri, we have turned away from Krishna. Basically, our idea is to live in a world without God. So this whole material world is our little playground for sense gratification. There is no God to tell us what to do. There's a famous poem by Kipling, written from the point of view of a British soldier. It goes, "Take me somewhere east of Suez, where the best is like the worst, and there are no Ten Commandments, and a man can raise a thirst." Thought you had to leave England to get that, but that's what people want, a place where they're, you know, they're no one's keeping score. So, there are no Ten Commandments. That song was changed into a popular ballad, and they said, well, there are no regulations, but the actual thing Ghibli wrote was, there are no Ten Commandments. He was talking about Burma. So we want that kind of a world. So God disappears from view. We cannot see Krishna. So how are we supposed to be engaged in Krishna's service? If we cannot come into contact with Krishna with our senses, how are we supposed to do this? Sevan mukhehi jivadu. How is our tongue supposed to be purified? And we are released from this bind, this catch, this dilemma, by Krishna, who says, okay, I will now appear in the material world in a way that even with your materially contaminated senses, you can come into contact with me. And the first way is the name. We can't, even if we don't, you have to understand, we at the beginning, we do not understand this name, Krishna. When we understand the name Krishna, we'll be like Rupa Goswami. I wish I had thousands, millions of tongues and hundreds of ears. So we don't understand the name. Nevertheless, we can say it. How else does he appear? He appears in the form of a deity. Prabhupada said in a lecture that Krishna is not stone or wood. He's spirit. But he can appear as stone or as wood. He does that, he says, because you are rascals. You cannot see spirit. You can only see stone or wood, so I'll appear as stone, as wood, so you can see me, touch me, bathe me, dress me, and so on. This is his mercy. So that even to our material senses, he makes himself manifest. And at least we have to, if we want to be on the proper path, we have to understand that this Murti of Krishna is not stone or wood, may look like that, but not. Actually, it's Krishna directly. Just as Krishna's name is Krishna directly, so is Krishna's statue or Krishna's picture, Krishna directly. The same Abhinatva nama namana, the same Abhinatva is there. It's interesting, you can go to countries of the Abrahamic faiths, Christian, Jewish, Islam, and you can explain how God can appear in his name, because he's none different. They have no problem. Nobody balks at that. As soon as you say, and also his picture or statue on the same principle, they get very upset. But actually, if that principle applies to Krishna appearing in sound, then he can appear in other media also. So this is how Krishna makes himself manifest to us. He appears with this in such a way that we can begin to put his name on the tongue. The tongue is particularly mentioned. Oh, the other way, of course, once you have deities, then you have prasad. Another way the tongue, Krishna appears to the tongue. And then there's other manifestations of Krishna, like Srimad Bhagavatam, the book incarnation, Nam Avatar, just like there's the Archa Avatar, the deity, there's the Nam Avatar, there's the book Avatar, Bhagavatam. So in these ways, Krishna descends in so many ways. Therefore, we need a process. The process is that we begin to chant the holy name. Krishna will not be visible to us. If we undertake the seva on mukhe properly, Krishna will gradually appear, because the senses will become purified. As the senses become purified, then Krishna will become manifest. This should happen. Now we know right in the very beginning in chanting, we're supposed to see the disappearance of the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. Right away, there should be some effect from chanting. I mean, this is what happened to me personally. You know, when I went to the temple for the first time, I had decided that I was a graduate student in religious studies, and I was looking for, like, what did all the religions have in common at their highest point? That's what I always wanted to see. And I decided that that Buddha was right when he said that, first of all, Buddha said that life is suffering, or we would say material life is suffering. From his point of view, life and material life are the same thing by definition, but he said, you know, material life is suffering. He said, the cause of the suffering are our desires, our graspings, our cravings. And if we want to become free from the suffering, we have to become free from these desires. And then I looked, and then, like, there were, like, saintly persons or sages, Taoistic traditions, Buddhist traditions, Christian traditions, Jewish traditions. They all said the same thing. That much everybody said. So I actually believed it. And I understood that material life was suffering. I had no doubt about it. And I could understand also how he had to be right when he says the causes are attachments, our desires. As Prabhupada says, it's an incompatible situation. We're eternal, and everything we know is temporary. What are you going to do about that? It's an incompatible situation. I knew that. So then I showed up at the temple. And then, I made a few attempts to become free from material desires, but it wasn't very successful. And every time I meet some spiritual person, they would be falling all over themselves to try to tell you how you could gratify your senses and still be spiritual. So I had no use for them. But when I came to the temple for the first time, this was like 1969, just in Philadelphia, just a little rented house. And there was this really harsh lecture. Devotees in those days were very heavy, in the mood of chastisement. And the temple president there was somebody who started it in Philadelphia, was named Subal. And I sat down with a whole bunch of people. Most everybody there was hippies. Because you walked in the room, you could smell the marijuana and the patchouli oil coming off of people's clothes. And first thing, as he starts giving this heavy lecture about the regular principles, the four regular principles. And everybody around me was getting really upset. People were kind of walking out, creeping out the back. But I was really enthusiastic. I thought, wow, these people are telling the truth. I was just really amazed. And then he said that he said something which I had never, ever heard before, which was that you can give your senses spiritual engagement. I've been studying religion, a lot of Hinduism courses actually, but everyone who taught them, and all the Hinduism courses I had were taught by Hindus, by the way. That was a sort of a thing they tried to do at this religion department I was at. But they were all Mayavadis. And I knew there was something called, you know, there were Vaishnavas and Vaishnava Vedanta, but we always looked at it from the Mayavadi point of view. So this was really a new idea, engagement of the senses. And of course, you know, especially if you're like a intellectual, a new idea is just attractive because it's new, nothing else. And so he talked about engaging the senses and said, you know, how you could do it, beginning with the tongue. He said the same thing. There was an early lecture by Prabhupada. He said, you'll be surprised to hear that spiritual life begins with the tongue. And he recommended chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So immediately I got a set of japa beads, and I said, okay, I'll do it. This is like Adho Shraddha. There's a little, you know, enough faith to try it. I would just try it and see if it would work. I mean, this was an experimental time, 1969. We were taking fairly powerful chemicals looking for transcendence. So, you know, some wooden beads and some words seemed relatively benign compared to... some of the other things going on. So I sat down and I started the chant. And my material desires began to go away. It just happened. I wasn't expecting it. Neither was I expecting it so quickly and unsubtly. And in fact, it started to happen so fast that I got scared and I quit. For two reasons. One, I didn't know who these people were. and what I was getting myself into and anything like that. And the second thing was, is without any material desires, I had no idea what to do with myself. And suddenly I didn't want to be with any of my friends, you know. I mean, I just was in limbo. I chanted for about 2 weeks and then I stopped. And then I felt horrible. And it was like this big cloud of grease rolled back over on me. And I just realized that now I'm really miserable and my material desires are going away. And I stopped it. So cautiously I began chanting again. And also I decided I better read some of their books. Then I realized philosophically that this was... Mayavada philosophy was wrong from Prabhupada's Isha Upanishad. But the effectiveness, my personal experience was the effectiveness of the name in the early stages, because later on we learned from Bhagavatam. Remember, like in 1969, Bhagavatam wasn't available. At least not the first canto. If you wanted to read the first canto, you could only get from the devotees in the temple the three volumes of Prabhupada had published in India and brought over. And the second canto was being published by ISKCON Press in Boston, in individual chapters. So I guess I read a little bit of that eventually, but at first there wasn't many books available. So the first canto, second chapter, which tells all about the process of devotional service, divinity, divine service, wasn't available. But there it explains that that the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance disappear. One becomes situated in goodness, and so on. These are the early effects of chanting. So that's what happened to me. So I got some faith in the process just by that experience. So. So the holy name and Krishna are the same. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, you should consider Srimad Bhagavatam as one large name. Krishna has a name because it describes some feature or activity or relationship that he has. Each name. They all mean something. And we have a short name like Krishna. Then they get longer names. And you get really, names like Yamuna Tiravanachari. That's a name. Somebody could be called Yamuna Tiravanachari Das. Krishna who wanders in the groves on the banks of the Yamuna River. Yeah, Yamuna Tiravanachari, Krishna who wanders in the groves and the banks of the Yamuna. That's his name. So just keep adding. See, that's Bhagavatam. It's the same principle. And so, as we'll see, Prabhupada explains also that if you hear Bhagavatam properly, there are certain conditions under which Bhagavatam is heard. You will see Krishna directly in the pages. We'll go over that a little more later. But under the right conditions, when there's a qualified speaker and a qualified hearer, Bhagavatam actually happens, and that Krishna appears. Because the same principle between the name and the Bhagavatam. So cultivating the holy name, and cultivating Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not just with Bhagavatam you just sit down and listen. That's why Prabhupada engages in a process to understand Bhagavatam. He tried to, the reason we have ISKCON is to have a society, a community in which it's possible for Bhagavatam to take place. Otherwise, it won't happen without the right conditions. So the culture of the name is actually the same culture as the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a process to be followed. There's a discipline. And this process, when it says one becomes initiated, what is that initiation? It's initiation into the process. The word initiate means to begin something. So when one becomes initiated, it means one becomes consecrated. Devoted, committed to, dedicated to this particular process. In the sequence that you have in your beginning with Shraddha, the first stage is Shraddha, some preliminary faith, some early interest. That will be followed by association with devotees, sadhu sangha, and then bhajana kriya, which as Prabhupada describes means becoming initiated and under guidance taking up the path of Krishna consciousness. That means we're committing ourselves to a process. I am going to now follow this process. Because at least this is my understanding of initiation. I don't know how many understandings there may be floating around Hare Krishna movement these days. But that I recognize that the aim of life is to develop love of God. I'm making that my number one aim of life. I'm committing it to it means that's the main thing, and everything else I may do, because I may do other things, I may have a career in the world, I may have a family, I may all those things, I may do other things. But everything else I do, I will do in such a way as to serve this main purpose. This is called Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi. Without that single-mindedness of purpose, it won't make it. So that's what I understand is meant by this this initiation. It's initiation into this process. Because Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada describes with the word vijnana. You see, many times you see this pair of words, jnana vijnana. Jnana vijnana astikya. You know, the brahmanas are described as this quality, jnana and vijnana. So jnana means, as Prabhupada says, that Prabhupada translates the word vijnana as science. In fact, that's the convention. If in modern day Sanskrit, that's the way you translate the word science. Even the word for modern scientific knowledge is vijnana. So jnana means theoretical knowledge, and vijnana means it is applied. So Prabhupada said in one place, he says, knowledge means information that is contained in the Vedas. But it is scientific because it is realized by the practitioner through his own experience. So there's a process. And that's what it is. Like, for example, if you take a modern course in material science, chemistry or physics or whatever, you sit down, ado shraddha. At the beginning, there's faith. It's not that we have faith here in the Hare Krishna movement, and then that university over there, they have knowledge. No, they have faith too, because all processes of knowledge begin in faith. If you sit down in a university and you open a science textbook, they'll immediately start telling you about things that actually no one has ever seen. Protons, neutrons, electrons. They're theoretical entities. No one has actually seen them. You know, what you see sometimes are little dots on a phosphorescent screen or little tracks in some kind of gauge or meter readings, and you say, that means there's a proton, or that means... But actually, you don't see them the way you'd see, like, you know, something new. So you begin with faith. You open the book, and you believe what they tell you. And then, after you've become adept and learn the science, you're able to do the experiments yourself. You can't do them right away. You won't know what it means. So similarly, our process, it begins with this, some adoshraddha, first of all, some faith. And then we continue to take up this process with the idea that everything that we are taught in the Vedas, we will also know by our own experience. In the beginning, we do not have the capacity to have those experiences. Just like, you know, in the beginning of say, a medical school, somebody shows you an x-ray, and you look at it and you see this blob of colors, of shapes, of smoky gray shapes. You don't have any idea what it means. You can't see it. Then when your eyes become trained in knowledge, you look at it and you see right away, ah, that's that. So that's part of the process, that we have this scientific process by which we can come to understand everything that's given to us, because we're building upon the achievements of the past. The achievements of the past mean Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Lord Chitti, they've made progress, and we are building on that. We have confidence in that tradition. The same way that a medical doctor or any kind of a scientist, he joins a research tradition, accepts its premises and its procedures as the valid means of knowledge, and they follow them. So it's just because we begin with Shraddha doesn't mean we're not a science, because Shraddha is just the beginning. There is this sequence of stages. Some of you have already taken the course that was offered a little earlier about this sequence, which is explained very lucidly by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Madhurya Kandambani. But it says the sadhaka, the practitioner, one who practices sadhana, the sadhaka, this is the kramaha. The last word in the verse is krama. Kramaha means chronological order, sequence, one thing after another. First of all, there must be Shraddha. Then there will be association with devotees, and after that, bhajana kriya, the performance of devotional service, as Prabhupada says here, surrendering to the spiritual master, being encouraged by the association of devotees, so that initiation takes place. This is what happens in bhajana kriya. And then according to those instructions, you practice Krishna consciousness. If the practice is correct, then thereafter there is anartha nivritti, the removal of unwanted things from the heart. These have also been elaborately analyzed, the different kinds of anarthas. Sins, material desires of various kinds, sinful activities, material desires, because you can have material desires that are not sinful, offenses. These are all the things. Unwanted, because if you want Krishna consciousness, these things get in the way. They're impediments, they're blocks. So that one has to go through the stage of clearing of this anartha nivritti. If that's done successfully, then nishtha, firm faith, Prabhupada always used the expression, once you become fixed up in Krishna consciousness, this is what he's thinking of, this word nishta. Before anartha nirvritti, our performance of devotional service is anishtita, it's unsteady. On again, off again, up and down again. But after anartha nirvritti, although there's still more purification that has to take place, basically nishta. One who arrives at the platform of nishta, as a rule, they don't fall down. They're not, fully advanced by any means, but they don't fall down. It can happen, but it's rare. So nishta, firm faith, fixed up in Krishna consciousness. Then, after that, there will be ruchi. Ruchi means that we have a taste for the activities of Krishna consciousness. We would rather do them than anything else. I like it. Actually, there's two stages of ruchi. The lower stage depends upon the excellence of the elements. In other words, I'm attracted to kirtan, but if the guy can't carry a tune, or the drummer doesn't know how to play, I'm a little discouraged. And if the people who are doing the kirtan are really expert, I really love it. On the higher stage, you don't care. It's the holy name, I love it. Prabhupada once related how Bhaktisiddhanta, when he would get a submission of an article for his journal, would just count the number of times the name Krishna appeared. And if it appeared a lot of times, it's a good article. Now, as a writer and as an editor, this bothered me very much. But now I understand this is the higher stage of ruchi. Maybe not a good idea for the editors to always follow this policy. But that is the higher stage of ruchi. That you don't care how excellent it is. And we could see that Prabhupada would take delight in some little childish picture of Krishna done by some Gurukula kid or something. To him it was great art, because it was Krishna. It's appreciated. There's a ruchi. There's a taste for Krishna consciousness. Ruchi refers to the activities of devotional service. The next word, asakti, which means addiction, means an addiction to Krishna. One becomes addicted to thinking of Krishna in some particular age or form or pastime, actually. More and more, one becomes obsessed with Krishna in a certain way. And from the meditation and the absorption of Krishna in this way, in reaction to that, one's rasa begins to become developed. And then there's a reveal. And then, of course, bhava, the ecstasies are there, the astasattvika vikara, crying of tears, standing of the heads, trembling, flushing, hot flashes, all those kinds of things. And then finally, prema, pure love of God. So this is, here it is, this is the chronological, this, and this, and this, and this, and this. So I think the main time-consuming area is anartha nirvritti. Once anartha nirvritti is there, things go along pretty fast. But we can get stuck here with become retarded in our progress through anartha nirvritti if we don't follow the process. And that verse in the Bhagavatam, nasta prayeshu abhadreshu abhadra, the inauspicious things in the heart, nityam bhagavata sevaya, they become removed by regular hearing of Bhagavatam, serving the devotee. And as a result of that, devotional service becomes established in the heart as an irrevocable fact. That means nishta. One comes to the platform of nishta. So this is our process. Now, I want you to look at, I want to go through you. If you don't follow the process, nothing happens. Very little. Like, we can't say nothing. Prabhupada starts to say nothing, and then he says, well, something, but not much. Because if you look at the this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bahu Janma Kariyari Shravana Kirtana Sabutana Paya Krishna Pari Prema Dana, you can go on chanting for many births, but still you do not get love of Godhead. Why? Because of being infested with the offenses. One has to follow the process. Also, in that early pamphlet, which is on the record, that first record that in 66, Prabhupada says, by chanting we can cleanse away all misgivings in our heart. Misgivings is another word that he uses for anarthas. And he says, it is automatic from the spiritual platform, and as such, anyone can take part in the chanting without any previous qualification. In a more advanced stage, of course, one is not expected to commit offenses on the grounds of spiritual understanding. So Prabhupada makes a distinction. In the beginning, yeah, just join in and chant. But later on, you have to follow the process. Now, there were controversies about this. And they begin. There's some discussions on this controversy in the early 70s. This came about because of a group in Hawaii. There was a yogi in Hawaii, an American guy his name was Sai. And he had his own yoga following. And his people started to come to the temple a lot, and they liked to chant, and they began to adopt more and more activities of Krishna consciousness. Sometime in 1970, they joined ISKCON. Sai joined ISKCON, became Prabhupada's disciple, and his whole movement joined ISKCON. Because I remember when I went to the New York Temple in 70, and they'd just taken all these people from Hawaii and brought them to the New York Temple. And they were all Siddha Sarup people. They had weird habits, like any time they entered a room, they offered obeisances. Because when they go to the temple, they see people come to the temple room and they offer obeisances, and they surmise that the rule was every time it's full of these strange habits and people chanting japa with their left hand. And gradually, anyway, this was this group. He got initiated. He came to Siddha Sarupa Ananta Goswami. Prabhupada gave him sannyas. But he left. And to this day, they have their own movement. Parallel ISKCON movement. More or less in California and the Pacific Rim. The list of all ISKCON centers, they were razored out. And they had very blissful kirtan. So there was a controversy, conflict between Siddha Sarup and some of his people and other ISKCON leaders. And so here's a conversation in Melbourne in 1974 where this is actually in the background. July 1st, 1974 in Melbourne. And my friend Burijan was there. He had some affection for these people at that time. And Prabhupada was concerned. So Prabhupada says that there must be surrender in order to be advancement. Then he quotes, na siddhim na avapnoti na sukham na param gati. You know this verse, right? It's in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Shastavidim utsrija, one who discards the injunctions of Shastra then there's no perfection, no attainment, no happiness, no highest goal. Doesn't happen. This is the beginning of spiritual life. And then Prabhupada says, the word is called discipline. No, excuse me. The word is called disciple. Disciple means who accepts discipline. If there is no discipline, where is discipline? Disciple. And disciplic succession. We have used this word. Not that discipline is finished by one man. No. It will continue to go by succession. That is purpose. So Prabhupada's concerned that whatever discipline he does, he teaches, we take it up, so the disciplic succession will continue. And then he talked about practicing Krishna consciousness with enthusiasm and spiritual strength. And then he says, we have to acquire spiritual strength by following the regulative principle. And that we shouldn't hear from those people who are not following the principles or the discipline. If you are not following the Vaishnava principle, you don't chant. As he backs off from that a little bit, it will not be effective. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is, there are so many, such big instruction book. He means to say we've got plenty of teachings and instructions. It is not that whimsical that you just make things up yourself. But still, we recommend that go on chanting. So then he backs off. First he says, don't chant if you don't follow the instruction. But we recommend, go on chanting. That will help you anywhere. That is also good. It is exactly like that. If you ignite wood for fire, though if the wood is dry, the fire takes place immediately. And if it is moist, then it takes time. Only smoke will come. So smoke is not required. The blazing fire required. Then if from wood, if simply smoke comes, you cannot take any work out of it. There is trace of fire. As soon as there is smoke, there is fire, but it is not useful. It is useful for troubling your eyes only. And so then Prabhupada says, yes, you can make the argument there is smoke. Therefore there must be fire. But he's saying, what use is that little bit of fire? You need a blazing fire. You require the flame. That flame cannot be produced if the wood is wet. We mean wet means materially contaminated. So Prabhupada's point is, following the process means to cook with fire. If you cook and you don't follow the process, you're cooking with smoke. It will take a long time. Then he tells another story, which I'll summarize here. He said it's a factual story. That there was a yogi who encountered a rich man, and the yogi said, you know, Jay, you got some yogi perfections, you know something? And the yogi said, well, you know, I can, in the middle of the winter, I can immerse myself in the water up to here, freezing water, stay there all night, and stay warm. Usually you die of hypothermia. I can remain the whole night or as long as you want. So the wealthy man said, oh, if you do that, you know, you give you some money or some gift or something like that. Be successful. So the guy did it. He went to a stream near the fellow's house, or some body of water in the dead of winter, and immersed himself in it, came out, went to the man, and somehow, for a reason or other, he didn't want to give the money. So the yogi went to the man's servant, his advisor, and said, the guy said, no, I'm not. He was advised not to give money because there was heat. That on like they do at Kartika, on a pole on the top of the man's house, there was one little deepa. You know, it's called a Akasha Pradipa. A little D lamp on a pole on the roof. And so the man said, you're sitting in the water. He saw the lamp there and he got heat from it. He said, the lamp was 3 miles away. That's what he said. So the yogi, after talking to the advisor and getting this explanation of why he wasn't getting his money, went to another servant and said, you know, this is going to ruin the reputation of your master. You know, he's really cheating me. And so the other servant says, okay, look, I'll try to do something. So in a few days, the master said to his servants, you know, we have to go on a journey. We have to be ready by you know, some certain time, 10 o'clock. So take your breakfast early and so we can get saddled up and we can get out of here. So he's waiting, the master's waiting to go, the time has come and gone. Servant's not ready. He finally comes to his quarters and says, what are you doing? He says, well, you know, he said to take breakfast first, so I'm waiting for it to cook. And the master looks and he's got this tripod, you know, and like there's a little fire down here, way up here is this pot. And he says, you know, you'll never cook like that with the pot so away from the fire. And then the servant said, well, you know, I thought if the yogi could heat himself from that lamp, certainly I can cook from this fire. So, anyway, so Prabhupada tells that story. You know, you have to have a fire. You have to follow the process. So then again, the beginning of next year, in 75 in Hawaii, the same issue comes up. This time, Siddha Swarupa is on the walk, and Rameshwar is there, and they're kind of down on householders, actually. They're talking about people who are not following the chanting, but they're not following the principles. And Prabhupada said, then what is the meaning of the 10 kinds of offenses? If he's chanting without offense, then it is all right. But if he's committing offenses, it will not be effective. There are 10 kinds of offenses. Whether he is strictly offenseless, then it is all right. If he's an offender, it will not be fruitful. It will be fruitful. See how Prabhupada says, like, this is, it will not be fruitful. Well, it will be fruitful, but it will take a long time. Because first of all, you have to become offenseless. Then you will be admitted. And then he discusses that, what if you think that I'm chanting and whatever I do it'll be cleared up by the chanting, then that's an offense, that's sinning on the strength of chanting. And so Guru Kripa says, so they say then my chanting is useless, so I should stop. Prabhupada says, no, not useless, but it's just like if you kindle fire and at the same time pour water, it will take a long time to kindle fire. Make it dry, keep it dry, then it'll be very quickly successful. So if you are committing offenses and at the same time chanting, so by chanting effect you will come to that stage, but it will take time. If you want to be transferred to the spiritual world quickly, just like if you want to ignite the fire very quickly, you must keep it dry. If you simply put on the wet wood, then the fire will not be very powerful. It will take time. Better put dry wood to make it successful. That is the process. The effect of chanting Hare Krishna will not go in vain, but it will take time. Then they get into discussion about people living outside the temple, because Siddha Swarupa says, you know, they're living outside the temple, but they follow very nicely. And so Prabhupada says, no, whether you live in the temple or outside the temple, the rules and regulations and the process must be followed. Then you are successful. Then they have a discussion about living in the temple. You live with devotees, Prabhupada. Therefore, it's recommended that you live with devotees. But if you cannot agree with the devotees, you've got your own opinion, I guess, looking at Siddha Swarupa, then you cannot make a new opinion so far the process is concerned. That must be followed. So you can have a difference of opinion about something. You don't want to live with a lot of devotees. But about this, what is the process of Krishna consciousness? There's no two opinions on that. That is not a good idea. That whatever I do, it is my independence, and I will chant. So that is good in the sense that someday he will come to senses. Otherwise, for the time being, the chant is not very powerful. The fire in wet wood is not powerful. It will create some smoke, although fire is there, but if you put on dry wood, immediately it will be blazing and your business will be done quickly. And then he also gives the example of taking medicine according to the direction of the doctor. And then they have a discussion. Rameshwar wants that when people leave the temple, they stop going out on book distribution. So how can they go back to Godhead if they give up the service in the Sankirtan party? So Prabhupada says, if he does not join the Sankirtan party, that does not mean his spiritual life is hampered. He has to follow the rules and regulations. He may not be able to join the Sankirtan party, but he must follow the process, rules and regulations that is wanted. And because he's living outside the temple, therefore he will forget all rules and regulations and do whatever he likes, then it will ruin the whole thing. Then someone says, Srila Prabhupada, is it faster if one lives in the temple and goes on the Sankirtan party? Is it faster? Prabhupada said, that depends on him. Even in the temple, if his mind is in a different subject matter, then how will it help him? So then Prabhupada, they get into discussion about the conditions under which you have to practice, and not association with non-devotees, sadhu sangha. And then Prabhupada said, he quotes from the Chaitanya Majalila about sadhu sangha. Lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoy. Then he says, for me personally, I had the opportunity to talk with my spiritual master not more than 10 times in my whole life. Not more. It may be less than that. But I tried to follow his instruction, that's all, although I was a grihastha. See, maybe here's a little sympathy for those who live outside the temple, brother. Prabhupada said, so this is the process. Huh? You sing every day, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitte Te Koriya Aike. I will make my spiritual master's instructions one with my mind, literally. Wherever you live, if you follow strictly the instruction of Guru, then you remain perfect. But if we create, concoct ideas against the instruction of Guru, then we are doomed. And then Prabhupada says, follow the instruction, that is required. Follow the instruction, wherever you remain, it doesn't matter, you are secure. Follow the instruction, then you are secure anywhere. It doesn't matter, just like I told you, I saw my Guru Maharaj not more than 10 days in my life, but I followed his instruction, I was a grihastha, I never lived in the mat, in the temple. It is practical. So many godbrothers recommended that he should be in charge in this Bombay temple, this, that. Guru Maharaj says, yes, better he live outside. That is good. He will do what is needed in the due course of time. And so then Prabhupada attributed his success in that. This is his idea how he associated with his Guru Maharaj, by strictly following his instructions. One other person says, the purpose of having the society is to show the devotees how they can always be 24 hours engaged according to your instruction. Yes, that is helping one another. If I am deficient, by seeing your example, I shall correct myself. This is the idea, not that a fool's paradise, all fools and joined together, not like that. There should be ideal life, at least the leader, the president, the GBC. They will show the example and they will follow. Then it is beneficial. And all of them are fools, then it is a fool's paradise. So there is another place where Prabhupada gives the same instruction. This idea that there's a process that has to be followed. You just can't do anything you want. But there's a practice. And so this should dispel any idea that there's not some discipline. Just in the beginning, we join, we chant, we don't have any qualification, but later on, we have to take to that process. We have to, as he says, cook with fire. So if people have been chanting and there's no progress, then we ought to be able to be expert. We ought to go and look and see, what are you doing? Here's the process. This is what you're doing. Or I can do it to myself. This is what I'm doing. Let me correct it. And then you'll see. It will work. We should become expert, like a physician. We should be able to see what, here's the process. If somebody is baffled or stopped or having difficulty, we should be able to pinpoint what it is. And we should be able to make corrections. And then progress will resume. Now that's one thing I hope to can get out of this. This is a science. We should know the science. We should be able to apply it to ourselves, and we should help others apply it to themselves. Any questions? Tomorrow we'll talk about, get into the science of chanting, and especially the three stages of chanting. And we, how we can get ourselves at least in the clearing stage. Yes?
You said that earlier, if one is not initiated, then he cannot start anartha yajna?
No. No, I didn't say that.
Okay, sorry.
I says initiation means a formal commitment to the process of Krishna consciousness. There are stages. Obviously, some anartha nivritti takes place right from the very beginning. And even after the stage we call anartha nivritti, it continues all the way up to prema, actually. If you read Vishwanath Chakravarti, anarthas, different kinds of anarthas are destroyed at a different rate. So these things, there's some anartha nivritti before that stage that has that name. And there has to, and there's some afterwards. So, but initiation is the formal process of committing myself to this. Prabhupada didn't get initiated for, 10 or 12 years? Huh? 11 years? Something around there, anyway. But he says, but practically I was initiated already. Practically means for all practical purposes, because he had accepted his authority and was following his instructions. So we have to look at what the reality is, not just, you know, that I go through some ceremony and it will do the job. You can go through the ceremony and it may not do the job. And sometimes it will happen without the ceremony. Although the ceremony should not be avoided for some other reason. Is that clear?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Yes. Do they just vanish? Some just vanish, and some take a little. You have to go through a few trips to get rid of them.
Some don't just
vanish.
Some just don't vanish.
Well, so they will. We'll talk about how to get them to vanish. Different things happen. People are different. They have different attachments. But I think if we can, there's a way to approach this anartha nivritti, this clearing of offenses, that if we know where to focus, it will help us do things more effectively. And if we understand this process, we also see that it's not impossible for anyone. The excuse that I'm too sinful is not allowed. It's not impossible. We'll see this. I'll prove it. Other questions? Comments?
Do you think that you help someone to tell them about the process? Like, if Prabhupada is given the process, you're doing the program and trying to just provide it to me. But when we try to tell them that, they said, like, yeah, we already know about that, you know, but I'm doing it, but it's a clear day process, but I want something else, and I want some other help actually. This is what I know anyway. I don't need camp advice, but I've been hearing about this car, and then there's an angel told me about that. Then how did he actually?
Well, this is a difficult subject matter sometimes, how to deal with people who, out of various reasons won't acknowledge they're doing something wrong, or have other various reasons for not following the process, or think they are, and really want. I would say that really the best thing is when people first come to the movement, they start out right. The very beginning days, you get very good instruction, and very early on you form good devotional habits. A lot of our things that held us up is we weren't taught correctly in the beginning. We didn't have good devotional habits. And then later you have to go back, then you've got bad habits, and you have to change those. So, when people first join, they usually are submissive and listen to somebody who's a teacher. That's your chance. Teach everybody correctly. Then these other things will not have a chance to take root and sprout. Well, at least have less of a chance, I should be realistic. And then it's very difficult to tell somebody something when they don't want to hear it. And we can spend some time later on talking about different ways of dealing with this, these kinds of cases. Anything else? It's 10 after with some of the other people coming in. They're not here yet. Go ahead.
I used to have this misconception of chanting that because Krishna and his name are indifferent, therefore when I chant I should immediately experience Krishna.
Yeah.
And it took me a while before I realized that we're not, it's not like fresh water is wet, you experience wet, you have fresh fire and you experience we're not the experiencer of Krishna. Krishna is the enjoyer, and that it doesn't just happen like that. It's just
That's right. Yeah, we do. But it can be done. That's the point. Yeah.
In this regard, the conversation we had and Prabhupada had with the students, and does it mean that if I understand that if these people follow a certain kind of process that was given, that they will be able to become successful in the devotional service?
If these people follow the process.
Yeah, and there must be something.
Yeah, sure.
Because now they are spreading also in Toronto and Vancouver.
Yes, sure. They have really good kirtans, in the sense that there's some material expertise. They're really in guitars and things like that. And that's their main thing, and everybody's blissful. But apparently, from what I can understand, this idea, they think that ISKCON devotees are too rigid and uptight, and it should be spontaneous. You know how it is, they have their quote. Their quote is, there are no hard and fast rules. That's their quote, They forget the next word, Durdaiva. Durdaiva, Lord Chaitanya said, I am so unfortunate. And one has to come to this platform of realizing that I'm an unfortunate. What is the unfortunate? He said, I have no attraction for your names. Why don't I have the attraction? Krishna is all attractive, so the names should be all attractive. It's because of offenses. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Prabhupada translates this verse of the Shishastika, he says, because of offenses. It's because of offenses that there's no... Why shouldn't there be? Krishna is so merciful. You have so many names. And all these names are all your transcendental potencies. And on top of that, there's no consideration of time and place, rules and regulations. This is your mercy. But I'm Durdaiva. I'm misfortunate. After all that, I still have no attraction. What's wrong with me? This has to be the mood of devotee. What's wrong if I have no attraction? So they forget that part, the Durdaiva part, and just go for the no hard and fast rules. So that will be very slow. It's better. Prabhupada says it's better than chanting than not, but it's cooking with smoke. He said you cook for smoke for 300 years.
Prabhu, you gave this example of the science that we can apply and see the result.
Yeah.
And in the, our case, it's the same thing. It's the same from
yes.
Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
But it's a little difficult to see the result close to us. We see Prabhupada, we see Bhaktisiddhanta in the past. We see so many devotees who attain perfection, but we don't see today many devotees who.
Then let's see what they're doing wrong. If it's a science, then if there are not so many devotees being successful, we should be able to look and see what's going wrong.
Yeah, that was the question.
Yeah, sure.
What is the thing that is missing?
That's what this course is about. That's this course. I know exactly what the thing is that's missing. And you don't need to be discouraged, because at least you can fix things up. You can fix things up.
Next class,
yeah. The missing thing. How to chant on the clearing platform. How to follow the process. But you have to be, you know, if you want, let me just end with a little worldly advice. If you want anything that's difficult to attain, you have to work hard for it. The people that win the Nobel Prize in chemistry or physics, they've worked very hard. They become single-minded. Everybody else is out going to bars, but they're at home at night over the test tube, you know, doing experiments. The people that win the gold medals in the Olympics, what are they like? They're obsessed people. They work very hard. They sacrifice everything else. They become single-minded. Anything that's difficult to achieve requires this dedication of purpose in the world. When we do it, in the Krishna conscious movement, people say, oh, you're fanatic, you're unbalanced. If we are going for a Nobel Prize or an Olympic gold medal, everybody say, oh, isn't that wonderful, look at that dedication. But because people don't appreciate our goal, they don't appreciate the effort. But it does require this dedication of purpose. If you don't have it, we can understand that your progress will be slow. So we should be clear. We should become clear about what I want. Why are we here in the Krishna consciousness movement? What are we after? What do we want? Do we really want to attain love of Godhead? Do we really want to be qualified to go back to Godhead? Do we really want to become free from the repetition of birth and death in the material world? We are told this is the only worthwhile thing to do with our human life. Everything else is basically a waste of time. Do we really believe it? So let me at least commit myself to the goal. Don't use an excuse that it's too hard, it's not doable by me. That excuse won't work. Get clear about what you want. Here, you have to understand, let's think. Here, this is my illustration. You know, like a scale or a pan balance, you know? Here's sense gratification. Here's self-realization. If self-realization goes up, sense gratification goes down. If sense gratification goes up, self-realization goes down. This is a law of nature. If you think you're going to do this, you're a cheater. This is Kaitava Dharma. These two things are antithetical. Self-realization and sense gratification. So if you want self-realization, at least you have to make up your mind that I do not want sense gratification. There's so much you can have, but just to keep you healthy, that's what you have to make up your mind. A lot of times people are retarded in their spiritual development simply because they cannot make up their mind. But at least we should be clear. The two don't go together. And if I increase my sense gratification, I should know I pay a price for it. My self-realization will be retarded. It has to be, that price has to be paid. We should not be cheaters. At least let's get clear on this point. Okay? Yeah, one last question. Are there people waiting outside? Okay, go ahead.
All of the birds were created in Sweden. Created in Sweden as man who has weak desires and who has no strong spiritual faith. What is the future of these two men?
One has a strong desire, the other has a weak desire?
Material desire, but because of his desire, he will follow the source. But others, he has weak spiritual desire, not
well, if, you know, weak spiritual desire can be treated. For example, if my spiritual desire is weak, but my desire is at least strong enough to make it stronger, then I will make sure I associate with devotees. For example. Because the desire has to become strong. Huh? It has to become strong. And if I like the ultimate aim, but I think my desire is not strong enough, then I'll do those things necessary to make my desire increase. So I'll associate with devotees. I'll avoid the association with devotees, for example. There's things we can do. We don't even want to do that. What can I say? So tomorrow we'll continue in the science of Krishna consciousness and get into the different stages of chanting and how to get on the clearing stage and thus increase our scientific understanding of this process. Thank you very much.